And welcome to our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and he's back with us, George Clark, Postal Inspector with the Postal Inspection Service at the Philadelphia Division. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you, Laura. Thank you for having me.
Oh, for anyone who missed your first conversation with us, which was absolutely fascinating, could you give us a quick overview? What is the U.S. Postal Inspection Service?
Sure. The U.S. Postal Inspection Service is the law enforcement arm of the post office, and we trace our roots back to pre-revolutionary days when Ben Franklin had to establish a unit of the post office when he was the postmaster general that would collect revenues from the various post offices around the colonies. And that's where our origin came out of those folks. The post office expanded, as the colonies expanded, postal inspectors helped establish postal routes, connecting post offices, helped patrol those routes, helped keep them safe. And from there, it morphed into protecting the mail, protecting revenue, protecting employees, to today, where we do all of that. And we also are heavily involved in mail fraud investigations. We play a role in Homeland Security when it comes to keeping the mail safe from hazards or dangerous items like poisons and bombs. We are very active in narcotics investigations and have a role to play in that. So we touch a lot of different aspects of the criminal justice system.
The first time you were on, I joked that you're the NCIS of the post office.
Sure.
And you actually are. Everything from investigating, you take reports, investigate, and you go the whole way through the process of prosecution.
Sure. Well, we don't prosecute the cases. The Department of Justice or your county prosecutors do, but we take cases to the prosecutors and work with them, as I am right now, on taking those cases through a jury trial. Yes, absolutely.
So you have forensic labs? I mean, describe what the officers do, what inspectors do.
Well, so the inspectors that make up the bulk of the agency, but we also have postal police officers, and we have a lot of administrative and technical and forensic support. But inspectors are federal agents, just like FBI agents, or as you compared us to NCIS agents. We carry guns. We serve search warrants. We interview people. We make arrests when appropriate. We do surveillance. We provide security for different instances where the post office needs security. We assist other law enforcement where we can or where necessary. We're just another, albeit smaller, body of federal agents that are scattered around the country in all 50 states and Puerto Rico and Guam. And we're investigating. We really is what we're doing. We're investigating crimes.
I was going to ask you later about Homeland Security, but since you brought it up, let's get that out
sure.
of the way right now.
Sure.
And we forget that mail is a very important part of our national security.
Absolutely. It is a very important part of our national security in many different respects. It's there to, obviously connect the country and as we've seen over the last couple of months, distribute valuable items like COVID tests have been distributed, medications. It's there to distribute medications, but it's also there to connect and buying people. And we're seeing these days a lot of people using it to shop, to buy stuff. And so while traditional letter mail might be down a little bit, there's no denying that, parcel volumes have increasingly climbed. So post offices are as busy as they've ever been. There's more stuff in the mail than there might have ever been. It keeps us busy.
I asked you about suspicious packages because
sure.
before the show, I always like to visit the website, see what's new. And I got down the rabbit hole of Homeland Security and mm-hmm. suspicious packages. And then you brought up something about, which I hadn't thought about. It's the transportation of mail that's really the reason you're so concerned about what's in that box.
The transportation of mail, because you never know where mail gets transported various different ways. Some ends up on airplanes, some ends up on trucks. And, an airplane could be a commercial airplane, and mail can be under the cargo, in the cargo hold with your baggage when you're flying across country. So, having hazardous materials or dangerous materials on an airplane can pose a danger, which is why, among other things, if you go to a counter line with a package, you are asked a series of questions about what's in there. So the post office can route that the proper way, land only, or it's going to go in air. Also, the security of our workforce and customers in post offices and other people receiving mail. So if something is hazardous or, poison or something like that is next to something that is innocuous, we want to try and prevent that. So or at least make sure that whatever it is packaged properly. So, you know, we take the safety of the mail, the safety of the transportation that the mail's on, and the safety of our employees and customers very seriously.
I joked when you came in, I said, "Are you packing?" And you're, "Yes, I am." And of course, that sounds cops and robbery, but really most of the crime that you're seeing is your white collar crime, isn't it?
Most of the crime I'm seeing is my white collar crime, but yeah, I'm packing because that's what I'm supposed to be packing. So if my supervisors found out otherwise, I'd have to talk to them about that. But yeah, most of the crime that I investigate, not all my colleagues that I personally work on, is white collar crime. And when I have a lot of colleagues spread between different teams, we call them, but you know, some places call them squads or you know, whatever that might be. And they investigate, some investigate narcotics offenses, some investigate violent crimes against employees, some investigate mail theft, some investigate mail fraud, which is what I do, which is a very much a white collar crime. Yeah.
Well, you know what, you just touched on narcotics too. So do they use the mail?
Absolutely. I mean, the mail is, it's protected by the Fourth Amendment. B, it provides a level of anonymity, and it, despite some of the bad press that the post office suffers, almost all the goods get there for a very cheap, get to where they're supposed to go for a very cheap price. So yes, people distributing or selling illegal narcotics absolutely use the mail. Well, which is where we come in if we're talking about narcotics investigations.
So if they're moving narcotics through the mail, I'm going to guess then that other things are going through the mail as well? Guns, stolen property?
we find all of it, and we get complaints regarding all of it. We find all of it when sometimes we are looking for it. We get referrals from other law enforcement that might get information about, you know, guns in the mail. Guns are illegal in the mail. So, you know, that's... When we talk about the crime wave that we see right here in Philadelphia, and I think a lot of cities are seeing, our agency has been asked to support efforts to bring about some sort of positive impact or change on those crime waves. And the role we would play is helping to get illegal guns or ghost guns or whatnot out of the mail stream.
So
it's not easy, though, Laura.
Well, how do you? Is it through tips from people seeing packages going to a home? One breaks open. How?
All of the above. Oh. Absolutely. I mean, the ones that break open, and that's almost like a gift. That's too easy, right? we get tips, investigative work, which, you know, I won't go too deep into, but just good old fashioned investigative work using what we learn over the years as indicators of something that might contain something illegal inside, and tips from other law enforcement or tips from citizens. Absolutely. Those help out. But, you know, mail is protected by the Fourth Amendment. So I, as a postal inspector or any of my colleagues, none of them can go into the post office or a plant where mail is getting sorted and just decide to start identifying parcels and opening them. We need warrants. And to get a warrant, we need probable cause. So we have to articulate why a given parcel should be opened. And we have to have a judge authorize that opening. So, or we have to get permission from an owner of that piece of mail. So, and if we're talking about illegal items like narcotics, usually an owner, a legitimate owner, is hard to identify because people don't want to identify themselves on a parcel of cocaine.
It doesn't break open that often, and somebody doesn't come in and say, "Hey, my Coke didn't come in the mail. Friday."
That is right. Although, I mean, there are certainly stories when cocaine doesn't get there on Friday of people calling in to find out where it is. So it is kind of, criminals aren't always the smartest, but...
Well, and aren't you glad for that?
Absolutely. Keeps us busy.
But unfortunately, here that leads into the other side of that coin. We ain't the smartest in the barrel either a lot of times. And there are so many of us that fall victim to mail fraud. And that is probably, I'm going to guess, 80% of what you're seeing. It's some dummy like me falling for a scheme or jump in there.
Sure. Absolutely. You know, first of all, let me just say mail fraud is a charge. So I hesitate to define that as a type of crime. It's a charge. It's fraud in the mail. But there's fraud over wires and there's fraud in person. I mean, you can be defrauded face to face. And, you know, mail fraud is a federal charge that enables the Department of Justice to charge something. So, you know, we call it mail fraud, but for purposes of this conversation, let's just call it fraud. Yes, people get defrauded all the time. And sometimes it's because the fraudsters are really that good. But oftentimes it's because, as you said at the top of the question, we're not that smart. And that's, I don't want to be pejorative here about a wide swath of the population. But the truth of the matter is, yes, the number of people that fall victim to something that you just sit there and, you know, your mouth sort of slowly opens agape, like, how did this happen? Is mind blowing. So,
well, and also we're naive sometimes.
We're naive,
hopeful. Yeah.
Well, we're naive,
vulnerable.
We're hopeful, we're gullible. We are, we have the best thoughts or best intentions. We want to think the best in people. And sometimes, dirty little secret, the other side of this is we're all a little greedy. So, an easy opportunity to make money, a lot of us might think twice and maybe might get interested in said opportunity. So,
well, then who's vulnerable? I know that you say that you do campaigns, obviously, helping certain populations. Right now, you're concentrating on veterans being targeted and the elderly almost always. That's the first person we think of, but it's not necessarily so. Who is vulnerable to mail fraud?
Sure. So, the elderly are consistently identified as a vulnerable group, and I think that's probably fair. But let's take today, literally. There is a war happening in Eastern Europe. This just started. And anyone that's feeling empathy or sympathy for people who are being harmed by this war are potentially vulnerable. And that doesn't mean just old people, because, you see the images if you are watching, the news or reading the newspaper. You hear the stories. It's hard not to be moved by that. And once that happens, you are potentially, whether you're 18 or 88, potentially, vulnerable to someone who might be trying to get money out of your hands. So I wanted to say, and this is a theme that sometimes we have during our consumer, our theme during a year for consumer protection is charity frauds. And I have no doubt, and people have probably already seen some of this, is that there are going to be people out there, bad actors, who are going to take advantage of this war in Ukraine right now to quote unquote raise money for the hurt, the vulnerable, the soldiers on the front line, the wounded, and that money's not going to go anywhere but a bank account where someone's going to spend it on cars and trips and fancy hotels.
So anytime that do they just wait for something in the news and to jump on it?
There is a subset of fraudsters that absolutely are waiting for something in the news. And when there might not be something big in the news, they'll when we talk about veteran fraud, I mean, there's certainly fraud on veterans, but a lot of fraud around veterans is a form of charity fraud, raising money for veterans. From the rest of us or from veterans themselves. It doesn't really matter. And some charities are very good about getting the bulk of the money raised to those charities. But some direct very little of the money they raise and some direct none. And it's important. And from where I sit as a criminal investigator, the ones that are criminal are going to be the ones that really direct none. But as a giver, as someone who wants to give, I suggest, implore even, that before anyone gives over a high-pressured phone call, or which is probably the most dangerous because you don't have time to do any research, but do research. There are websites, Charity Navigator is a big one, but there are other websites, Better Business Bureau, that will help you identify charities and businesses, for that matter, that are not everything they say they are. So it is not illegal for a charity to spend the bulk of its money raising money, spend the bulk of the money it raises going back into raising money. But that's probably not where you want to send your money if you're trying to help veterans. You want a charity that's going to direct the bulk of the money it raises to actual support or programs. So there are plenty of public resources. They're not secret. They're not hard to find. Google. I say this time and time again, and hopefully in 2022, most people are comfortable using Google. I mean, 10 years ago, it was a little bit more of a touchy subject to sit there and suggest that people go to Google. But just going to Google and using that tool itself will give you an idea as to whether you want to give to anything. But in this case, we're talking about charity frauds of sorts. And from there, do as one feels they want to do.
Hey, 22 cents on the dollar going to the charity. Hey, that's pretty good.
I mean, we have charities that will send 8 cents to the dollar to the actual charity. And I haven't looked at this in a long time, but I think the law, the established law, is that any money going to a charity is better than none and protects these bad actors. And let's be fair, I mean, they are bad actors. They might not be criminal actors, but they're bad actors. But the law protects them if some of the money is going to charity. So the charity it says it supports. So you'll see this a lot. There's a ton of them, of police, fire, you know, organizations raising money for police officers, firemen, veterans, children.
Animals
from any of the above. And because that is because these are playing on emotions for some of us. Maybe all of us, or maybe, you know, some of us have emotions or connections to all the above. And, you know, we want to help kids. We want to help hurt kids or starving kids. We want to help hurt animals or wounded animals. I mean, you know, my wife won't even let the SPCA ads that pop up on TV, you know, we have to change the channel because they are so emotionally wrenching. And we want to help our veterans. And we want to help our police officers. So these topics are ripe with different frauds. But there are people who will specialize or will find niche areas of interest, and they will also prey upon people who have an interest in whatever that might be.
Do they get mailing lists from legitimate charities? If I've given to a charity, I find that I then receive multiple mailings from similar organizations.
So, you know, absolutely. I mean, it's I have some experience from my own investigations, colleagues' investigations. There are brokers out there that sell these lists. And, you know, a lot of organizations will sell these lists. I mean, it's just a name, phone number, address, and the bulk of the business that these brokers are doing is probably perfectly all right. They're selling lists of potential donors to the American Heart Association or something like that. But there are other people out there who might want to buy those lists. And, you know, all fairness to a broker is a broker. And, you know, they're trying to make money and they'll sell to whomever can pay them.
Hey, if you're just joining us, this is Our Delaware Valley. I'm Laura Lewis, and with us today, Postal Inspector George Clark from the Postal Inspection Service, Philadelphia Division. If you'd like more information about, well, the post office, USPS.com or .gov will get you to the post office. But if you have an issue that you suspect that there is mail fraud, if you want to report something or ask a question, go to USPIS.gov. That's USPIS.gov. They also have a toll-free number, 877-876-2455. That's 877-876-2455. But again, if you just Google the post office and look for postal inspector or go type in fraud, you will get to the Postal Inspection Service.
And Laura, let me just add, there's more on our website than just reporting if you want to find out more about our agency or, you know, if you're interested in one of these jobs, our employment information is certainly on there. But yeah, absolutely. If you have a complaint to file, you can go to our website and do that pretty easily.
You alluded to appealing to our emotions. And obviously, the next area of fraud I want to ask about is romance schemes.
Oh, sure. Sure. Absolutely. Romance schemes. Romance schemes are nothing new and they're not going to go away. You know, 15 years ago, they were all over the dating app, websites back then. And now they're all over the dating apps. There's not one that's that I'm aware of that's safer than the others. As the population moves from one type of dating app, and this seems to happen, you know, one's popular for a while and then for whatever reason, it goes out of favor, the scammers will move to those apps. So what happens is, you know, people will connect with someone who they think is real. They'll start having a conversation. They'll start getting personal. The conversation will morph from maybe the app to phone calls to direct messaging. And people fall in love this way without ever meeting, and fall in love so much so that the person who, the victim will start sending money. The scammer will start developing or telling reasons why they need money. I've heard so many different stories, but, you know, one is I am an engineer. I'm going to generalize here, but they like stable, good, professional sounding jobs like engineer, doctor. These seem to be popular. So I'm a builder, maybe. I'm an engineer working on a hospital for children in some third world country, far, far, far away. And I am having problems with the local authorities on permits or taxes, or even I need some money to get the cement contractor or something like that. I mean, something weird. And next thing you know, they're getting money out of the person, out of their victim who thinks they're in a relationship. And there's always promises, I will be in your hometown, wherever that might be, next week or next month. I'm looking forward to seeing you. We're going to build a life together. You know, the sort of talk that a lot of us might really fall in sync with, and particularly older adults. You know, this, I have not seen too many younger victims of romance fraud, at least not in this way. I mean, right now there's a bunch of documentaries on Netflix and other things about other TV streaming services about young people, you know, falling victim to some version of this. You know, was it Making Anna? I think is really right now a big one. But in any event, the more traditional one that we've seen for years generally preys upon older adults that maybe are in a second relationship or third relationship. Doesn't matter. Their spouse. Their real spouse might have passed away. They're lonely. They're living in a place where it's hard to connect with, in the real world, with other single adults. So they fall victim to these apps and to people on these apps. So
long, big, but and then two more. You know, we're starting to run out of time.
Oh.
Work at home and I just thought of the other one. Work at home and lotteries.
Lotteries. Well, these are big ones in the mail. Always have been. Work at home schemes are, you know, you get contacted to stuff envelopes. I mean, I remember when I was a kid seeing TV ads for these stuff envelopes at home. It's, you know, people get connected, not so much over TV ads anymore, but through you know, advertising on the social media platforms that might pop up on your feed. But nonetheless, you know, you're asked to stuff an envelope. And what we see a lot of envelope stuffing these days is, you know, stuffing counterfeit checks or some sort of scheme to inducement that's illegal. That was the work at home schemes. Lotteries. Lotteries have been in the mail for a long time. And it's important to understand that it's illegal to play a lottery in the mail, first off. So there shouldn't be any legitimate lottery that's using the mail as a way to solicit people. But what we'll see, what happens is people will get solicitations for foreign lotteries. That's a red flag. People will get solicitations telling them they've won a lottery. That's a red flag. And then what happens is, you know, they tell you you've won, you call the number or make contact however they want you to, and they induce you to start paying taxes, fees. You know, we want to release the money, but we, you know, it's being held up because the government needs its taxes paid, whatever government it might be. Now, that's that, you know, there's so many red flags in this, but first off, you don't owe taxes until you actually earn a lottery. So we all see when a big lottery happens here in the United States, the Powerball or something, you know, one of the storylines is always, how are the taxes going to be paid? Are they going to take a lump sum? Are they going to take the monthly pay or yearly payouts? How much is actually lost to taxes? So people are tuned to taxes. So they think when they're told you have to pay taxes on this, if you did win a legitimate lottery, you will have to pay taxes, but not until you have the money. You don't prepay taxes on a lottery. So that's just a little thing to look out for, but you shouldn't be anything in the mail. Any lottery in the mail is potentially illegal, and sweepstakes in the mail might be a little bit different. But you know, if they say you've won something and all you have to do to get your money is X, Y, and Z, it's almost certainly not true.
Social Security comes on all the time, and they get the scam where they say you can pay this off with credit cards, with with gift cards, buy X number of Walmart or Amazon gift cards and deliver them, and that will be how you can pay off your debt.
Laura, I'm glad you raised that, because that's another, you know, if you have already gotten yourself, you know, taken step one and two in one of these schemes, and they're starting to ask you to go buy gift cards. Yeah, they'll do gift cards or they'll do online gift cards, which I'm less fluid with personally, but basically it's you don't even have to go to a store anymore, but they want gift cards, and basically you load up a gift card of some sort, an account, you give the number to the person on the other side of the transaction, and they pull it off. This is not a legitimate way, or I shouldn't say legitimate. I mean, it is a way to transfer money, but it is not a way that a lot of real lotteries, real businesses, real charities are going to be looking to get paid. It just is not. You know, they're going to accept checks from you, create a real paper trail. So these cards, if someone tells you, go buy cards, go online and buy Apple cards or a big one, Amazon cards, TD, Visa, whatever, gift cards, and then give me the number, that should be a big red flag that you are about to do something that you can't reverse. And the reason why, you know, they prefer these payment methods is they're fast. They're fast. You send a check. You have to write the check. Maybe someone sees you write the check. You have to send the check. There is time. The check has to clear. I mean, this could all take 3 to 6 days before they actually get their money, and there's time to stop it. But if you buy a gift card and you give the other side the number, it's gone in minutes.
That's a warning sign. And, oh, I'm giving you the 2-minute warning here. So immediacy is always one of those flags. If you have to do it now where you can't think about it, that's a big warning sign. How do we protect ourselves?
How do we protect ourselves? Well, listen, this is a cliche. I feel silly saying it, but it is so true. If it's too good to be true, it probably is. And let me just wipe out the probably. It is. If it's too good to be true, it is not true. It is, so that's a big warning sign. Really think that through. I think also, you know, people talk to someone, talk to a friend, talk to family. Hey, I got this. What do you think? Or I have this job offer, or I met this guy online. Well, they might say, have you met him in person? No. I mean, talk to people. They might help you think through what is a silly or illogical situation. Immediacy, as you said, anytime you're in a situation where it has to be done now, it is, don't do it. Take a pause. Take a deep breath. There's a reason why they want you to give your credit card number, even legitimate things. Give your credit card number over the phone right now. This offer expires at the end of the phone call. This offer expires at the end of the day. These are inducements to convince you that you have to do this now. So those are things that should give you pause. And there's not much else. Google, actually, I said earlier, use the internet. You get an offer, you get a charity, you get a business opportunity, a lover. You know what's interesting? A lot of these pictures for these romance scams, if you know how to do so, you can paste them into Google and you'll find that they come up. Because, you know, that's what happens. These scammers will go to the internet, they'll borrow in quotes, a picture of someone they find and use that as their profile. So, you know, there are ways to just take a deep breath, do a little research, use the information we have at our fingertips is amazing. People can take those steps to protect themselves.
And Google is one, and the Charity Navigator, I use Charity Navigator all the time, but your own website, you have a lot of information there.
Our website has a lot of information, the FBI's website, the Federal Trade Commission, the FTC's website, that is absolutely part of the FTC's mission is protecting consumers. They have a lot of information. The Better Business Bureau has a lot of information. And, if you still are uncomfortable, you know, you can call us, you know, call our number and we'll try and circle back around to you. I mean, I don't want to offer us up someone to sit there and chat with and get advice from. But, you know, if you're really stuck and you really think you might have encountered a fraud, you can call us or your local police department and talk through what you found. Maybe you have, and maybe you've got something that needs to be investigated, but at the very least, maybe we can help you talk about out of doing anything harmful.
And for the United States Postal Service, USPS.gov or com, USPS, or again, just Google Post Office. And for the Postal Inspection Service, go to their website. It has a lot of information, USPIS.gov. That's USPIS.gov. And they do have a toll-free number. You can get it when you Google as well, but you will get all the information you could possibly imagine. If you just Google post office, that actually does have a link to take you to the Postal Inspection Service if you have a problem or you want to ask a question or you just are suspicious. They have a lot of tips there. And my guest today, George Clark, Postal Inspector for the Postal Inspection Service. Well, thank you for coming on today.
Thank you, Laura. Thank you for having me. It was a pleasure, and I'm always happy to come and have an opportunity to educate people a little bit, because at the end of the day, let me just part with, you know, me, my colleagues in the agency, my colleagues in law enforcement are only the tip of the iceberg in you know, the preventing or uncovering fraud. Really, people need to protect themselves. That's the best way. So I'm happy to have the opportunity.
And again, that is USPS.gov for the United States Postal Service. I'm Laura Lewis. This has been our Delaware Valley.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.